John Gambadoro, Dave Burns, the Burns and Gambo Show. Hour number two is we're live from the Auction Community Studios. We're going to get Kevin Pelton on in just a moment.
A crazy busy day. Crazy. ASU with the win last night. The Cardinals going out there and signing a really good defensive lineman. Jimmer Fredette coming to the Phoenix Suns.
Paul Goldschmidt getting years and $130 million with the St. Louis Cardinals. Kelly Oubre done for the season. A couple of names being leaked in the GM search.
Mark Stein come up with a couple of good names, including Kevin McHale.
Yeah, let me get everybody caught up on the March Madness, too, because it's day one of the tournament as we know it.
I lost two Sweet 16 teams.
Yeah, I'm down one. I lost Belmont out of my Sweet 16. Right now, Kansas is crushing 13th seed Northeastern, 66-36 with about 7 minutes to go in the second half there. In fact, there's only two games currently underway right now. That, and it's halftime between Murray State and Marquette.
Ooh.
Future son Ja Morant and the 12th seeded Murray State Racers are winning 42-35.
Who's winning?
Murray State's winning 42-35.
Who'd you pick in that one?
I picked Murray State. I picked Murray State to go to the Sweet 16. As a matter of fact, Ja Morant has 10 points, 8 assists. He's 2 of 4 from the floor, 2 of 2 from the three-point line. He's off to a very good start.
I got Marquette.
Did you really?
Okay. Yeah, my bracket sucks.
Of course, your bracket stinks. LSU won, Minnesota won, Michigan State won, Florida State won, Auburn won, and Maryland beat Belmont. Those are the games in the finals so far.
Belmont looks pretty good. I liked Belmont. I had them going deep.
We put up the bat call, the bat signal. We pointed it in the sky, aimed it towards the Pacific Northwest because we've got Jimmer Fredette. We've got Kelly Oubre out for the season. We've got a couple names being leaked on the GM search, and we need to check in with our own Kevin Pelton from ESPN. He is our NBA guy that we, in case of emergency, break glass, and we have broken the glass. Hi, Kevin. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, that is a surprising amount of Suns news going on for the first day of the NCAA tournament.
I know. It's like, and the Jimmer thing, I mean, it's
just
like
blowing up.
It's like the gods conspired. I mean, seriously, Jimmer Fredette on the first day of the NCAA tournament signs in the NBA. You can't make this stuff up, Kev.
You really can't. Well scripted by the Suns.
So what kind of impact do you think he can have?
You know, I mean, I think that it's going to be an interesting transition for him. In many ways, playing in China made a lot of sense for Jimmer because, you know, as we know, dating back to his BYU days, his best skill is creating a lot of shots, and that's not usually what NBA teams are looking for in their role players. You know, they're looking for someone who can come in and fill in around the guys who create a lot of shots, you know, Devin Booker, most notably in the Suns' case. So, you know, I think he's going to have to show that he can knock down, catch, and shoot threes, run the offense a little bit, and I think those are the skills the Suns will be looking for to, you know, see whether he is, in fact, a keeper.
I spoke with a bunch of NBA executives on, he could still shoot. He's still a great shooter. You could put a blindfold on him. He could still knock down shots. The defense was always an issue. I think the question now is expectations. When he was the 10th pick in the draft, the expectations were different than they would be now as a 30-year-old. I'm thinking 15 minutes a game, be an 8th or 9th guy off the bench. Do you think he could last a few years in the league in that role?
I think it's possible. You know, I mean, again, the question is, you know, whether he can be effective in that role as much as he can be with the ball in his hands, with the offense really kind of revolving around him, because he was always more of a shooter off the dribble than a catch-and-shoot guy. Now, you know, one thing that has changed in his benefit now is it's much more common to see, NBA ball handlers shoot the off-the-dribble three. James Harden, most notably, Steph Curry, you know, popularized that before him, Damian Lillard, all sorts of guys. You know, he's not at their level as a pick-and-roll player, but in terms of pulling up from deep, well beyond the arc, if Igor Kokoshkov gives him the green light to do so, that can certainly be something that, you know, is a more valuable part of his skill set now than the last time he played in the league.
So you're saying off the dribble could be the way he kind of butters his bread, so to speak, this time around in the NBA?
Yeah, it's his relatively best skill, I would say. You know, he's not as exceptional a catch and shooter.
Kevin Pelton from ESPN, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Jimmer Fredette. Gambo was the first report signing what is basically a two-year contract with the Suns, a contract for the rest of the season, and then a team option for next year, kind of 10 games to prove himself. In part, it comes with the news that Kelly Oubre needs surgery on his thumb. a minor procedure, but one that is going to cost him the rest of the season. We were kind of the mindset on this show that Kelly Oubre had done so much in his time here that he was almost a must-keep for the Suns at this point going into restricted free agency. What sort of offers do you anticipate Kelly Oubre getting going into restricted free agency?
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. I mean, restricted free agency has a tendency to go, you know, two different ways. There's the one scenario where a team really prioritizes trying to take the player away and make it painful for the original team to match, and then it ends up, you know, being a pretty good contract for Oubre. And the other one is, you know, you kind of languish on the market, and it's just a situation of trying to use the leverage of taking that one-year qualifying offer to get a larger long-term deal out of the team. I mean, I think realistically with Oubre, we're probably talking around the full mid-level exception, you know, somewhere in the range of 9 to 10 million a year is probably his market. I don't see teams, you know, dipping deep into their cap space to get him, but he's, you know, certainly shown something during his time in Phoenix, the best stretch of his NBA career, and carved out a sizable role despite, you know, my concern when they picked him up is, well, why do they need another wing when they already have, you know, all these young players on the wing? But he's proven that, you know, he can be as good as just about anybody outside of Devin Booker in that group.
Can I sign that right now, $9 to $10 million a year? Because we're expecting a lot more. I mean, I'm thinking it could get to 15, maybe even higher. We'll see. I think he's going to be highly sought after. If they could get him for 9 to 10, I think that'd be a steal. But I do think they're going to have to move one of their wings, if not two of them. TJ Warren could be a really good bench guy for somebody, and Josh Jackson still has, you know, some value in this league. They'll build around Oubre and Mikal Bridges, who they really like. They're going to try to get a power forward like Tobias Harris, but what do you think the market is for TJ Warren, Josh Jackson? Do you think it would be robust, or is it going to be hard to move those guys?
You know, Warren, I think it's a tough break that he's been out for such a long period of time because, you know, he was playing well before that. It had shown improved range and all that. I think, you know, it makes him attractive as a sixth man to a lot of teams. Jackson, you know, the upside here is all it takes is one or two teams to really believe in him. I think there's probably a wide variety of, you know, opinion around the league that, you know, some people don't believe he can ever be an efficient scorer and that, you know, he needs the ball in his hands too much because of the fact that he has not been a great catch and shoot guy. And as a result, they wouldn't be that interested. But I think there are some teams that, you know, really liked him going into the draft, still think he has that potential. And probably, if we're being quite frank, think, you know, hey, we can get more out of him than Phoenix was able to because of the fact that, you know, they didn't have necessarily the playmaking or the infrastructure around him.
I you know what? I'm glad you mentioned that because that thought's been kind of bubbling in the back of my head. Kevin Pelton, NBA insider from ESPN, our guest here in the Burns and Gambo show. I do wonder if Josh Jackson is one of those guys, and we've seen plenty of them around here, who when they get into a more stable situation, a situation where, you know, kind of the basketball X's and O's and the front office and everything is just a little more organized and orderly, I wonder if Josh Jackson is the kind of player who can really find himself somewhere else if he gets better coaching and just kind of has a better infrastructure around him.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. I mean, look, you know, he was the fourth pick in the draft for a reason, and, you know, a coveted trade, you know, trade up potential ahead of that, you know, and teams I don't think are going to, after 2 years, just completely rule that out, especially because we have seen flashes of him playing at that level. It's just been about his ability to do it on a consistent basis.
We've seen Mark Stein's reporting. The Suns are looking for a new executive. Kevin McHale's name has come up. I think Paxson's name has come up. I know they've interviewed over seven or eight people. So they're into the interview process right now. Would McHale be a good fit? Would Paxson be a good fit, in your opinion?
You know, it's been so long since we've seen Paxson in that lead executive role that it's really tough for me to say with him. McHale, I think, you know, maybe somewhat underrated as a GM, but, you know, the question is he going to be committed at this stage of his career to really going out and, you know, scouring the earth looking for players? That's always, I think, one of the key elements that distinguishes the former players who are successful in that role from the ones who are less successful. And, you know, it's been now over a decade, I think, since he was, you know, or close to that, since he was running the show in Minnesota. And, you know, the league has advanced a great deal in that time. I mean, he's been involved, was on the sidelines in Houston. but, you know, not necessarily in the front office, as we saw the evolution of, you know, analytics staffs, which, again, he would have been exposed to in Houston, and then also kind of the increasing complexity of how teams manage the cap. So, you know, those are the questions that if I were interviewing Kevin McHale for this position, I would want him to answer.
Okay, good stuff. Kevin, we appreciate the time, as always. Thanks for joining us. Back to the tournament games, okay?
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You got it. Kevin Pelton joining us on the Colter Automotive Group Sports Line, Colter Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, almost everybody expecting the Cardinals to take Kyler Murray with the number one pick, if or even when they do. It could set off a domino effect throughout the rest of the NFL. We'll tell you what some of those dominoes look like next on the Burns and Gambo show. All right, quick tournament updates. 12th-seeded Murray State is being 5th-seeded Marquette.
Yeah, I'll take that guy with the second pick if we get it. Yeah.
55-40.
Third pick, sign me up.
Ja Morant is dropping jaws is what he's doing.
Kid's legit. And he's not, listen, he could definitely be your point guard of the future. He's not going to come in as a rookie and dominate. I wouldn't expect him to come in and dominate. But that would be a hell of a pick. You get a veteran point guard for a year or two. You let him, you know, play behind him. And I mean, he's uber talented.
He is sensational.
Uber talented.
Yep, he's 4-7 from the floor. He's got 15 points. He's already got 10 assists. Murray State looks really, really good. They're beating Marquette by 15 points with about 15 minutes to go in that game. There's only one other game going on right now, and it's about to go final. Kansas is just crushing Northeastern 79-51. That's a 4 over a 13. When that goes final, Murray State's going to be the only game going on.
I got a guy right now. Call me crazy, but I would be more afraid of the Suns if they had Ja Morant instead of Zion.
Oh, yeah, no.
I don't agree with that, but that's what a guy just sent me a message.
No.
Like, people are watching Ja Morant right now, like, I haven't seen this kid this year. This kid's good.
I want him too, but over Zion, no.
So just when we get done with all the Kyler Murray mania, we're going to start Ja Morant mania?
Pretty much, yeah. And then here's what's going to happen. The Suns are going to finish with the 4th pick in the NBA draft, and they're not going to get Zion or RJ or Ja Morant, and then hopefully
you'd be like, "Why did you beat the Warriors? Why did you beat the Bucks?"
No, I'm done doing that.
God.
I'm not going to do that anymore.
You needed to let the Knicks win.
Speaking of Kyler Murray, it's been a slow news day on the Kyler. It's been a busy news day on every other front. Not a whole lot going on the Kyler Murray Cardinals rumors, things like that. Although, man, I read another story today on AZ Central. They kind of like made a compilation of all these different websites, NBC Sports, CBS Sports, Sports Nation, and they're all talking about this thing like it's not even an if, like it's a win, like it's just a matter of time until Kyler Murray becomes a member of the Arizona Cardinals. And whether that's true or not, I have absolutely no idea. But and they're all praising it. They're all talking about it like this needs to happen. This should happen. Pro Football Focus wrote a big story a couple days ago about here's why we think Kyler Murray is the best player in this draft. And they made a very compelling case for why they think Murray is not just the best quarterback, the best player in this draft.
Last year they had Baker Mayfield, right?
Man,
best player in the draft.
Last year they had Baker Mayfield.
Now they got Kyler Murray.
There are dominoes to fall.
This was fantastic.
You want to read? Because I know you. This was
Listen, I'll react. You're the best driver in town.
Exactly. You hear that, all you Uber and Lyft guys out there?
You're a better driver than all those Uber and Lyft guys.
Domino one. The Cardinals get their quarterback of the future for the second straight year and draft Kyler Murray.
Okay.
Let's say
that's what a lot of people believe is going to happen.
Yep. Let's say that happens.
Okay.
Number two, the New York Giants then acquire Josh Rosen for the 37th pick overall and a day 3 selection.
Ooh.
So the Cardinals would send somewhere between a 4th and a 7th rounder to the Giants in addition to Rosen in exchange for 37.
Okay,
overall.
You know what? Could live with it because it's an early 2nd round pick. I would much rather have the 17th pick or New England's pick. I could live with 37th overall and then an extra pick in maybe the 5th round. I could live with that. Okay. That's not bad. I wouldn't criticize that trade if they made it. All right, so that's domino number 2.
Domino number 3, the Raiders now knowing that they can get one of the 3 best defensive players available. available in this draft stand pat at 4, despite phone calls from the Miami Dolphins, and take whatever's left of Nick Bosa, Quinnen Williams, or Josh Allen, all of whom were considered potential number one overall picks before Kyler Murray's
look, ascent. We know more than anything the Raiders want. They want defense. They want a pass rusher. They would love to get Bosa or Quinnen Williams or even Josh Allen. So if the Cardinals do take a quarterback and they don't take Bosa or Williams, then it very likely bumps one of those pass rushers, or it absolutely would bump one of the pass rushers down to the Raiders at 3. It makes a lot of sense.
Number 4, the Buccaneers get an elite defensive talent at number 5. That's what they would draft at that spot.
I think it's same. I think, yeah, there's going to be a point where this runs out. But, yes, the Raiders at 4, the Bucs at 5, as long as the Cardinals aren't taking Quinnen Williams or Nick Bosa, it bumps everybody else up a notch to get one of the top defensive players on the board.
The Giants, now at 6, could get defensive help from what they're calling the second, but still very good level of draft talent.
Because they're not drafting a quarterback.
Because they're not drafting a quarterback.
By the way, they worked out Haskins.
You're right. They did.
The Giants worked out Haskins. But if they're not going to draft a quarterback, if they're not going to have to draft Haskins at 6, well, then that makes a lot of sense that they just upgrade their defense. The defense was their major problem last year.
And that second level of draft talent considered to be guys like LSU's Devin White, Rashawn Gary of Michigan, Devin Bush, Ed Oliver of Houston, Cleland Farrell, Dexter Lawrence out of Clemson. Those are opportunities there.
And Ed Oliver, listen, you could wear your Giants jacket whether you're playing or not. You don't have to take it off. There's no rules that you have to, if you're not playing, that you know it's cold there. You could wear the jacket. You're fine.
The Jags trade back with the Dolphins, who then select Dwayne Haskins with the 7th overall pick.
So explain, break this one down a little bit for me.
Okay, so the Jags' number 7 pick is now a prime spot to grab a quarterback. The Jags don't need a passer. They got Nick Foles. They invested heavily in Nick Foles.
So where's Miami picking?
So Miami's picking 13.
So they're going to move up 6 spots to get their quarterback.
To get Dwayne Haskins.
So to move up 6 spots, you get a pretty good haul.
Yes.
That's a pretty good haul to move up 6 spots.
Jacksonville, in their opinion, would drop from 7 to 13 while picking up the Dolphins' second round pick and other stuff in the process.
I would think you'd get other stuff.
I would think you'd get other stuff as well. The Broncos, sitting at 10, select Missouri's Drew Lock with the 10th pick in the draft. Didn't they have their pro day today? I didn't know. I didn't see how he did, but Missouri had their pro day.
Drew Lock. I had something on Drew Lock today. Met with the Dolphins and the Giants.
I'm sure he did phenomenal at his pro day without even looking. I mean, who doesn't?
I'm sure you're right. I'm sure Drew Lock did not screw up badly on his pro day.
So, yeah, Drew Lock met with the Giants and also the Dolphins.
Okay, so two teams that might be kicking the tires there. The Jaguars, who have dropped to number 13, now select one of the Iowa tight ends, Noah Font or T.J. Hawkinson.
I don't know. You tell me, man. Like you went to that Iowa football game. Which one did you like? You were at an Iowa football game. And did you not break down the Iowa tight ends for me?
I don't know if you...
How were you doing
I don't know
there?
If you saw the picture of me there. It was about 25 degrees at kickoff. I was not paying a whole lot of attention to the Iowa tight ends.
You didn't take, extensive notes?
Sorry. No, I did not. I'm sure somebody out there can give you an extensive scouting report if that's what you're looking for. Washington decides, this is domino number 9 now, Washington decides not to select Daniel Jones at number 15 and instead goes with the wide receiver out of Oklahoma, Marquise Brown.
Not N'Keal Harry.
Not N'Keal Harry.
So Marquise Brown's the first wide receiver to go.
Yep.
On that, and they don't go with the quarterback. Obviously, Alex Smith's career could be over. They've addressed their quarterback's needs for the short term and aren't going to draft one. Okay. Interesting.
And then finally, number 10. The Giants think very, and I'm reading this verbatim, the Giants think very, very hard about selecting Daniel Jones, the Duke quarterback, at 17.
Wait, they just traded for Rosen.
I know. That's why I wanted to read it verbatim. But instead, they select extra defensive help instead. Guys,
they're contradicting themselves on this.
I know. Why would
number
they think
10,
very, very hard about Daniel Jones?
Number 2, the Giants acquire Rosen with the 37th overall pick in a day 3 selection. You're not going to trade for Josh Rosen and then take at number 17, take a quarterback. That makes absolutely no sense. That's stupid. That's dumb.
But they ultimately believe that they will pass on Daniel Jones at number 17.
Well, if you're getting Rosen, yes, you're passing on him.
Look, at the end of the day, I want a first rounder. I'd love a first rounder. If you get number 37 overall from the New York Giants, I can live with that.
Yeah.
That's mostly okay. A joke. It's okay.
Just like, it's okay. Did all right.
Yeah.
It could have been worse. Could have been better. You know?
Yeah. Could have been better. But not bad. They're moving on to the next round. Did ASU win last night or did St. John's lose last night? Plus, we could be on the verge of our first real upset of this tournament so far. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. We are completely in the throes of March Madness, and for the first time in a long time, I know they just made the tournament a year ago. But man, having ASU play in a game on a Thursday or a Friday, right? And we talked about this yesterday. We talked about whether this season for ASU and Bobby Hurley would be defined by what happened last night. And whether it would be a success or a failure. And it was funny, I was listening to their very own pregame show after our Burns and Gambo show yesterday was done. They had Doug Haller on from The Athletic and Kyle Dodd, their own color analyst, were both on. And they both agreed, if you don't win this game tonight against St. John's, this season is a failure. This season, it's time to take that next step. It's time to break through and get that first win, something that you haven't done in a decade. And thank goodness they were playing St. John's. I don't know if there's too many other teams in this tournament that they would have beat playing.
No,
they stink.
And that's why I don't. St. John's beat Marquette twice. I don't know why I picked Marquette to beat Murray State. Marquette sucks too. They lost to St. John's twice. How do you lose to St. John's? Isn't any good. They got one great player.
Well, you're having a lot of self-loathing about your bracket, aren't you? You're really.
Realize just how bad I am at this bracket stuff. Yale.
You used to think you were all that and a side of chips.
You know, we used to do this Andrew Jackson pool. I never won the damn thing. You know, we'd have like, I've never won a pool ever on these things. I always try to pick a couple of upsets. I get the wrong ones.
Man, so
I didn't take Murray State, the 12 seed. I took another 12. I took Yale.
I
took New Mexico
13.
State. Yeah. You always take a 12 over a 5, right? You know, my 12 was New Mexico State.
Yeah, they lost.
Oh, they almost won.
They had a million chances to win that game, and they didn't.
He goes to the free throw line. You hit all three free throws, you win. He misses two out of three.
Murray State is obliterating Marquette right now by 24 with about 8 minutes to go in this game. I mean, they're just killing them.
Yeah,
they're just killing them right now.
I'm waiting for somebody to say, do you think the Suns should take Ja Morant over Zion?
Oh, I guarantee you there's somebody out there.
Oh, we're watching a kid play?
Oh, yeah, especially if they're watching this game right now. Yeah. I guarantee you that.
You kind of need a point guard. Do you think maybe Ja Morant instead of Zion?
Yeah, and everyone really tap those brakes. It's still Zion Williamson. Back to ASU. It was a really sloppy game. The first half was brilliant. I mean, the first 15 minutes of that game, ASU exerted their sheer dominance of will over St. John's, and St. John's had no answer to it at all.
None.
But then, and ASU does this. Anybody who's watched ASU basketball this year, they go through these stretches, these lulls where they take bad shots and they make bad decisions and they turn the ball over too much and things just get sideways and sloppy and messy and they had to survive all that. And the number of times that St. John's cut it to 7 yesterday in that second half, and they had that opportunity with about 2 minutes to go, where they could have cut it to 5. I think it was Simon had the 2 free throw attempts. He missed both of them. And then ASU got the dunk at the other end to kind of reestablish order. That game, like 5 or 6 times, felt like it was this close to getting out of control in the second half.
And you almost don't know how. How could it have been this close? They opened up a can of whoop-ass on St. John's early in that game. I mean, and it was a lot of inside play. It was Dort. It was Cheatham. It was Romello White. Kamani hit a 3. And they had this 16-2 run. And at one point, you know, they were up 33-15. I mean, Remy hit a bank shot. They're up 33-15. They got an 18-point lead. And, like, this game is over. Like, St. John's can't hit the broadside of a barn. Like, St. John's couldn't shoot. They just didn't play. 2 of their better players were awful. They combined for 1 of 17 from the field. St. John's only had 2 players contribute anything all night. Now, Shamari Ponch tried to bring them back single-handedly. He got a couple of baskets. He had a steal and a layup. They cut it to 7. But then Romello White had a basket, brought it back to 9, kind of restored order, and they were able to hold on for that win. But, yeah, the first half was perfect. Like, they did everything right until, like, Bobby got the technical foul for arguing a call and put his hands up. And listen, like, we could argue all day long about whether that should have been a technical or not. And Bobby, after the at halftime, the woman reporter, the sideline reporter asked him, and he was like, I just asked the question. Like, I don't know why I got a technical. Like, your reputation, dude. Like your reputation precedes you. There's they all know no you're a
doubt.
Hothead.
There's no doubt.
Like, everybody knows your reputation. You're a hothead. Like, you, anything you do, they're looking for a reason to tee you up. And they did. Yep. They teed him up last night.
I think you're 100% correct. In fact, this morning on the Doug and Wolf Show, Bobby Hurley talked about the technical foul he got.
Yeah, I mean, what's done is done, and I'm not going to comment on it because my wife doesn't want me to get fined again, so I'm not going to say anything about it, but I will say that I spoke with the official briefly, and I just asked him, are we good, you know, as we started the second half, and we both agreed that we were, so we just moved on from it.
And you know what? What you said just a moment ago is just 100% truth. Just about any other coach in America, what Bobby Hurley did last night probably doesn't warrant a technical. But because of his antics, and I love what Bobby has done to ASU basketball. He's made something seemingly perpetually irrelevant relevant. I mean, it's been a miracle what he's done with that program. But he has got such a reputation around college, and all you have to do is watch one ASU basketball game and just see his antics on the sideline, and you know he's got a rep, and it's not a good one.
Now, you do that in a 2-point, 4-point game against Buffalo. You could cost your team a victory. You got that technical when you were blowing St. John's out in the first half. Like, you got that at a, you know, like your team survived that. Now imagine, like, you know, if it's a close basketball game, you know, and every possession counts, and Bobby loses his mind and costs his team 2 free throws. Like you do worry about Bobby. Like, you do worry about him because he's so. Like, I do think he loses himself for a couple of minutes on a lot of calls. Like, there's 10 calls throughout the game that he disagrees with, and he just can't bite his tongue. You know, he can't bite his tongue. He's got to yell, and he's got to scream. So it didn't come back to hurt him last night. They didn't play well in the second half. I'll say this. They're not beating Buffalo the way they played yesterday.
Oh, no.
Okay, you got to play a much better game to beat Buffalo.
Buffalo, and we're going to have their beat writer on coming up in about an hour, so we can kind of give you a scouting report on Buffalo. Obviously, this is Bobby Hurley's former team. Nate Oates is now their coach. He's a former Hurley assistant. This team was one of only 12 in all of college basketball to rank in the top 30 in both offensive and defensive efficiency in the KenPom ratings. So they're solid on both sides. Number 15 in the NCAA net ratings, so a top 20 net rated team. 5-1 against top 100 teams. Their best win was against Syracuse. They also swept a couple games against Toledo. They are good. They're very good. They do feature one of the top 25 players in this tournament, according to ESPN.com, in guard C.J. Massenburg. Now, yesterday, Shamori Ponds, we thought he'd be a top 25 guy. He wasn't on ESPN's listing. C.J. Massenburg is one of the top 25 players in this tournament, according to ESPN.com. Great guard play. They push tempo big time, but they don't do it in a sloppy fashion. They're still very good defensively. They're very good at the rim. They do a lot of things fundamentally very well. This is going to be a very tough matchup for ASU tomorrow.
ASU had to play last night, the Wednesday game. They had to travel. They got in, what'd you say, 4 o'clock in the morning.
Thereabouts.
And now they're going to play tomorrow. You know, so it's like there's no quick turnaround. You know, Buffalo had time to prepare. They had time to scout. They had time to do it. You know, ASU has no time for that. They don't have any time for that. And there's no familiarity. Oh, Bobby's familiar with Buffalo. He doesn't know any of these kids.
He knows the coach.
He doesn't know any of the kids.
No.
He doesn't know any of these kids. They weren't here with him. So there's no real familiarity with the kids. So there's no real advantage for Bobby.
We've got the Burns and Gamble podcast. You can subscribe right now on your iPhone or Android and then just listen to the show whenever you want. The Burns and Gamble podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealers. He's been the main engine for the Suns since arriving here and certainly since being inserted into the starting lineup. How is the rest of the roster going to respond to the loss of Kelly Oubre for the rest of the season? And will this injury impact Oubre's offers this offseason? We'll get into that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Long two. Ja Morant has the board, and he has a triple-double. And Murray State fans erupt as the pride of Murray, Kentucky, and of Dalzell, South Carolina has a triple-double. in the NCAA tournament against the Marquette Golden Eagles.
I'm laughing because, man, there has just been so much for Suns fans to talk about today, Diamondback fans to talk about today, Cardinal fans to talk about today. Ja Morant getting a triple-double today in Murray State's just obliteration of Marquette in the first round of the NCAA tournament. You watch, March 21st is going to go down as a day where Suns fans who maybe thought trading that pick if it wasn't number one.
Oh, no way.
Goes from, yeah, I'd consider it to, oh, no way, you got to get Ja Morant.
Well, can I take a step further?
Sure.
Is it no longer Zion or bust?
Well,
is it no longer Zion? This kid just killed Marquette.
Okay, I can only tell you how I feel on this one.
Uh-huh.
All right, I can tell you that if the Suns didn't get the number one pick in the draft, all right, my first inclination would have been to trade the pick. All right, if you don't get the number one pick, then trade the pick. Go get a veteran player with that pick. Today is the day where I'm starting to think that if you can still get Ja Morant, you don't trade that pick.
I've got a little factoid for you guys, if you'd like, about Ja Morant.
Please do.
First triple-double in an NCAA tournament game since 2012, it was Draymond Green.
Get out of here.
Yep.
Seriously?
That's what Michelle Steele on Twitter put it out there.
Wow. Mark Stein, I already know the top two picks in the NBA draft. One, Zion. Two, Morant. Three, blank. Got an NBA executive just hit me up just now, because I'm like, wow. He's like, don't blow it out of proportion. He's not Trae Young.
Don't
I'm like, oh, like Debbie Downer. Like,
don't blow it out of proportion. He's not Trae Young.
Don't blow it out of proportion.
So in other words,
he has a triple-double in the NCAA tournament.
So in other words, unnamed NBA exec just basically told you to cool your jets that Trae Young is better than what we're seeing out of Ja Morant right now.
Yes.
Basically? Okay. Okay. Well, I don't know. Today's the day, Suns fans.
Overall body of work. He's not as good as Trae Young.
Well, because, I mean, we know how this works. And we're going to talk about Kelly Oubre in a second. We know how this works. Okay. There's hardcore basketball fan and there's kind of casual basketball fan. Ja Morant doing what he's done all year long on the small stage of the conference that Murray State plays in is one thing. Ja Morant doing this on this stage
right.
opens him up to a whole other world of basketball fans who go, oh, my God, who is that guy?
Knock on Ja Morant was he played weak competition and he averaged over 5 turnovers a game.
Yeah, he's a little sloppy with the ball.
You know, a little sloppy with the ball.
He's got 6 turnovers. He's almost got a quadruple-double.
How many turnovers?
6 turnovers in this game.
He does turn the ball over. That's the knock on him. He is a little bit of a turnover machine.
But he's got 15 points, 15 assists, 10 rebounds, and 6 turnovers. And Murray State's, okay, it's not quite an obliteration. They're up by 16 points, 77-61 with about 3.5 minutes. But when you do this on a stage like this, especially a small school guy like Ja Morant out of Murray State, people who only knew the name or only knew the numbers and maybe didn't catch a lot of Murray State games, they're catching this now.
Right.
And now the fire goes from kind of smoldering embers to all of a sudden you got actual flames going and people going, ooh, I want that guy. Get that guy. The Suns need a point.
I mean,
look
at
him.
Mark Stein, like, I know who's number two in the draft. Like, it's not even a question.
Probably. Let's talk about a lot of Suns news today. Ja Morant's triple-double notwithstanding. Obviously, you broke the news about Jimmer Fredette. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Jimmer Fredette, fine. And if you just tuned in, the former BYU star, a big recognizable name still, even though he's been playing for Shanghai for the last couple of years in the Chinese basketball.
Unbelievable how big he is.
It's the name still moves the meter. He signs kind of a 2-year deal with the Suns, the rest of this year and then a team option for next year. So kind of a 10-game sort of prove it deal to see if he can stick with them next year. But there were two other significant pieces of news coming out of the Phoenix Suns today. And number one, Kelly Oubre's season is done. He's going to have surgery on the thumb, 4 to 6 weeks recovery time. That timetable pushes him out of playing the rest of the year. He is now, as Spencer has been saying in his updates, effectively right now today a restricted free agent.
I was shocked at the numbers that Passan gave us, that he thought that
9 to 10 million a year.
I mean, really? Like, that's it.
That's what he said. In fact, I'll play it.
That's less than TJ Warren's making.
I'll play it for you right here. Here's Kevin Pelton, the guy we like to turn to when it comes to NBA stuff on the Burns and Gambo show.
I think realistically with Oubre, we're probably talking around the full mid-level exception, you know, somewhere in the range of 9 to 10 million a year is probably his market. I don't see teams, you know, dipping deep into their cap space to get him, but he's, you know, certainly shown something during his time in Phoenix, the best stretch of his NBA career, and carved out a sizable role.
If Pelton's right, that's great news for the Phoenix Suns.
I can't imagine. I seriously? $9 million a year for Kelly Oubre?
That's what the man said. You're not buying it.
No.
You reject Kevin Pelton's notion. I reject you, Kevin Pelton.
I don't know, but I think that he's probably off by about $5 million a year.
I do think there's something that possibly could be going on here. You tell me if you think there's any validity to this.
Okay.
And we know how this works with a restricted free agent. A team can sign him to a poison pill type deal.
Yes.
The kind of deal where the Suns go, God, I don't want to match that because it's front loaded or back loaded or whatever. But if the Suns send out enough signals publicly
that they're going to match any offer,
then those offers tend to not be very good because teams aren't going to waste their time. Teams aren't going to waste their time on, hypothetically, a Kelly Oubre if the Suns make it crystal clear they have every intention of matching any offer he gets no matter what. Then I think that three quarters of the league almost automatically says, I'm not going to offer him anything then. So now if you're Oubre and you're trying to get the best possible deal and you're only dealing with a quarter of the league because the other three quarters don't want to waste their time on a player they think the Suns are going to match anyway, it kind of cuts your leverage down to size if you're Oubre. That dynamic could be in play when it comes to the Suns and the contract. If they send out enough strong signals, don't bother. We're going to match. Don't even waste your time. Did the same thing happen with Bledsoe when he was going through restricted free agency all those years ago? Don't even bother. We're going to match. And he got no offers. He got nothing out there because the Suns made it clear you're wasting your time if you make him an offer in restricted free agency.
He's a year away from unrestricted free agency if he doesn't agree to a deal with you, right? Because you tender him an offer. If he just accepts that offer for 1 year...
Yeah, unless you sign him to your own long-term contract.
You got to try to sign him to your own long-term contract.
So
what if nobody offers him a lot of money and you're like, we can get him for $10 million. Nobody offered him anything. We'll offer you 4 years and $40 million or 5 years and $50 million. He's like, no thank you. I'd rather just play next year on a one-year deal, bet on myself, and be an unrestricted free agent.
But then does that kind of defy that what he said on this show when he talked about wanting to be here long-term and he kind of expressed it? But
that's emotions that the player, there's agents that are going to come involved and say, let's do it this way. In some ways, you hope that somebody does make him an offer because then you just match the offer and you keep him and you know you've got him. Rather than take the chance that you don't agree to a contract extension with him and he plays on a one-year deal.
Really quickly, Mark Stein tweeted this out about 3 hours ago. In the early stages of their GM search, the Phoenix Suns have spoken to Kevin McHale, former Wolves GM and coach and former Rockets coach, and likewise also has interest in Bulls consultant Jim Paxson, formerly the Cleveland Cavaliers GM, according to league sources.
Suns are going to interview a lot of people. They've interviewed, that I know of, at least 8 people. I think they're going to keep this very close to the vest, and not let a lot of these names get out there. So I don't know the names. I do know Kevin McHale. I've spoken with Kevin. I talked with Kevin last year when his name came up for the job. And at that time, I knew he didn't want to coach. This seems like a good fit for him where he could just oversee, lives here. He can oversee an organization and be a helping hand. They'd be able to keep James as the GM and maybe Trevor too, and just have somebody else that's kind of overseeing everything and checks and balances type of thing. Paxson makes some sense. I think he'd probably want a little bit more control than Kevin would. There's some other names that I'm sure are going to leak out on guys that they're meeting with, but it does seem like all indications are they're looking for a head of basketball operations.
Paul Goldschmidt has a new contract in St. Louis, and the numbers have us wondering, couldn't the Diamondbacks have afforded that? Gambo's got some info on that. You're going to want to hear next on the Burns and Gambo Show.